Thou
The living room's dark, save for light being cast from the big TV screen and the imminent sunrise that's teasing the one starry sky with whispers of morning.
Hey, George.
Hey, Lions. How's it going?
Man, it's going so good. Oh, you know what? I should have opened with, hey, George, because I heard, and you know, it's so distinctive that every time I booted the game up, Sue, no matter where she was in the house, would just be like, ugh. Because it, like, she found that noise very grating. Everybody who watched the streams also found the noises the Pikmin make very grating. I'll dig into that a little bit when we get there. but the sounds super distinctive.
It is super distinctive. The similar sound that I've been listening to a lot lately is my kids have been listening to just video game music. And from Yoshi's Story for the Nintendo, the main song is like the Yoshi singing. So they go, ba, 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 ba.
Yeah.
And I've been listening to that on a loop for the last week, not on my phone, through my children, you know? It's the problem is that, like, right when they started singing it, I realized my error. But I mean, the cat was out of the bag, two paces out of the tube, man. We're in it, you know?
Yeah. This is just all of reality now. This is my life. I've had a very similar thing happen. I think that is part of having kids, but unfortunately you don't recognize that you have made that mistake until the thing is done making noise and then the children start making the noise and you're just like, oh no, like I played this thing for them, or they were watching this thing that had this little musical ditty in it, and that is now, they don't understand how earworms work and that they're incredibly annoying, and so now they are just out spreading this disease.
Right. I was listening to a this is totally related to video games. I was listening to a sea shanty medley, and one of them is like, what do you do with a drunken sailor, what do you do with a drunken sailor, what do you do with a drunken sailor early in the morning, right? Like that's it. But here's the thing is that Lizzie, like you said, doesn't know how earworms work and doesn't know how kind of music works. So I listened to what would you do with a drunken sailor, what would you do with a drunken sailor, what would you do with a drunken sailor, what would you do with it, and I'm like, resolve the melody. I was like, this
I'm
is
gonna die.
Just over and over, and each time I'm like, this time, and it was never this time.
It's I can never remember the name of it, but you remember in Super Mario 64 when you're going up the big flight of stairs,
mm-hmm.
and it sound, the scale sounds like it's rising infinitely, which obviously is impossible, because even if it was going up forever, eventually it would get outside the range of human hearing. And there's a specific name for how you do that, and it's that feeling, like, you can just feel your heart constricting and like pressure on your chest when you're just like, when are we gonna get to the fireworks factory?
It makes me think of what was it called, The Good Place, where Jason, who's a complete idiot, says, you know, like, what his version of hell would be. He's like, you know, I would be at a Skrillex concert and I would keep waiting for the bass to drop, but it never drops.
I mean, that sounds very vapid, but that would be a particular kind of hell.
Yeah, it would be bad.
Yeah. I can think of worse things, but he's not entirely wrong. Didn't we played a video game, didn't we?
Feels like a thing that we would do.
We're in the habit. So we played Pikmin 1, which was a listener request, came in via the feedback form. This person was very efficient. In one listener feedback, they submitted, I think, like six games, and they were all either games that I was like, yes, I would like to play that at some point, or games that I was like, oh, I've never heard of that. But then when I looked into it, I was like, oh, this looks like it could be an interesting title. All from the kind of like middle Nintendo era, so like N64, GameCube. And I was just like, oh, this is nice, because, you know, then nobody wants seven emails. They want like one well thought out email. So if you want to send seven emails, you can. But this game originally came out in October of 2001 on the GameCube. I was really hoping I could make an argument to play the Wii re-release, but unfortunately it doesn't just give you widescreen. It also fundamentally changed the control scheme in a way that is arguably like a big difference for the game. So I was like, no, okay, I'll play the GameCube version, which turned out to be fine. But God, this game would benefit from widescreen. If you have never played or heard of Pikmin somehow, it's basically the story of an alien who looks like a little man who crashes on a planet that's totally not Earth, except it is. And then there are these little creatures that help him get his ship repaired so he can fly back home into outer space. And it seems on the face of it like it's this colorful, happy-go-lucky kind of almost resource management, like a squad management sort of game. But after only a short time of playing, I realized that, in fact, this game is don't starve if you colored it in with Crayola crayons. So that really changed everything I'm about to talk about, because it once you recognize, like, oh, wait, this is not chicken, this is pork, like, then you start to assess the thing super, super different. So I think you were just talking about you had played the sequel to this not that long ago. So what was your original nostalgia experience for Pikmin?
Well, for Pikmin 1, so like Pikmin 2, actually, I also played a while ago. The issue was that I was then trying to separate, as I was, you know, collecting my notes, trying to separate, like, wait, that was from this game, right? No, my original experience for Pikmin was honestly playing... I have never played Pikmin 1 before now. My nostalgic experience for Pikmin would be Smash Brothers.
Yeah. And playing... The game is just an game. Like, it is just, it has become the cultural touchstone for all these other game universes.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, I became familiar with, like, oh yeah, you know, there's like a space guy and he throws little people at people, and all right, you know, like that was how I became familiar with it. And also to a degree familiar with its popularity, because, you know, I was like, oh yeah, that's Olimar. I think he's from Pikmin. And people were like, you haven't played Pikmin? I was like, oh, okay. Whoa. All right. Like, let's all take it down a notch. So how about you?
So this game I have a very clear memory of, because it was at one of the most financially poorly run times of my video game life. So when we were in college, there was a brief window where I was like, oh, there's these PS2 games I really want to play, and there's these GameCube games I really want to play, but I could not afford both. So for a period of maybe, I don't know, 9 to 18 months, I would go to like a GameStop, trade in one console for another console, borrow or rent the game I wanted to play it, then swap back. So in that period, I probably swapped consoles 4 or 5 times, which is unbelievably stupid, but I want to play this game, and this is the only way I can easily play it. And so I just wasn't really crunching the numbers, because I'm sure if I had, I would have been like, oh, if I just wait 3 months and save up my dollars, because GameStop does not pay well for trading. Right. So it was an incredibly stupid way to do things. But during one of the 2 or 3 windows that I had a GameCube during that like period of my life, that was when I was like, oh, I'm really excited to play Pikmin. My girlfriend at the time was like, she didn't really play a lot of video games, but she loved Pikmin. So like, her and I played this all together. She played it on her own. It was just like, oh, this is like, this to me is the GameCube game, right? Like, a lot of people would probably say Sunshine or like Wind Waker. But when I think of the GameCube, I think of Pikmin, because that was literally the reason I got the console for a couple of months.
Yeah. No, for me, my, you know, seminal GameCube game, you know, there were a bunch of them I played, but it just Tales of Symphonia, man. I probably put hours into that game on the GameCube. I don't know why.
You know, when a couple times where we had like, we have nothing to do all weekends, I remember putting like a bunch of hours into Tales, but I don't think I ever finished it.
So the thing that I really liked, because we're here to talk about Tales of Symphonia, the thing I really liked about Tales of Symphonia is something I don't think I would like anymore, which is its New Game Plus was deeply enjoyable, you know?
Because it had like a ton of options.
Right, because the thing is that you collected like a different type of currency as you played the game. like, so you collected gold, but you also collected these crystals. And then at the end of the game, you could spend the crystals on different unlocks for the New Game Plus. So it gave you a reason to do New Game Plus and New Game Plus Plus and New Game, you know, like whatever. So I probably, because of that reason, I probably sunk like 60, 80, maybe 100 hours into it. But, you know, the fun thing I liked about it was that the thing that requires me to put hundreds of hours into it, which I just don't have, you know? So it's like, if somebody said, you know, what do you think of Tales of Symphonia now? I'm like, the plot's fine, I guess, you know? It's only fun if you have 100 hours to put into it.
Right. There's so many games that I'm like, oh, that looks interesting for me 20 years ago.
Yeah. Or 20 years from now, you know?
Sure. Like, yes. Yeah. Yeah. With 20 years in either direction, I guess. But not right now.
Yeah, whenever my parents are like, yeah, we don't know what to do in retirement, I was like, I know exactly what I'm going to be doing in retirement. they're gonna have to peel me off of my, you know, nice chair that I use to play video games, you know?
Yeah, you're, I don't know, 20 years from now, do you think VR will finally be a thing? You'll just be sitting there drooling with your VR helmet on.
And they're like, where did Dad go? And it's like, I mean, Dad effectively passed away.
He's not here. He's right there. I know what I said.
Yeah. But
We got to chill and then we can talk about Pikmin. So if you want to send in 7 game requests that we will eventually get to most of, probably, you can do that through the feedback form on the website. You can hit me up on the socials. You can find me on Twitch because I stream most of the games we play, and you can make requests in there. Links for all these things are in the show notes and also at nogog.show, nogog.show. It's fancy. But the feedback form is probably the easiest because you don't have to have a special account or do anything. It's just it's a box you type games into, and then we play those games. If you want to support us a little bit, subscribing is great, but giving a recommendation to a friend is better. So if you know someone who loves Pikmin and this episode turns out, because, you know, it's gonna, then, you know, maybe recommend this episode or go find a different one. I don't know. I'm not your dad. If you want to go above and beyond, you could support us on the Patreons. If you do that, you get the after show. All patron levels get the after show, even for as little as $1. But if you go real crazy and you become an 8-bit classic or 16-bit hero, then we have to say your name with our mouths. So first, I'm going to say the names of our 8-bit classics. Kevin.
A rad red Pikmin.
John.
A blisterin' blue Pikmin.
Jason.
A yawnin' yellow Pikmin.
And Yarno.
A amazing Olimar.
And our 16-bit hero, Michael.
An exploding rocket that eventually leaves you stranded on a planet without hope or reason to live.
And threat of asphyxiation.
Yeah, like, I mean, sorry. Thank you for giving us money, though.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's not Michael's fault that he just happens to be at the end of the list, which I'd say it's like 60-40. Like, sometimes the end of the list is like the best one, and then it's like, oh, that's the sad one.
It's always the twist, though, you
it
know?
Is always the twist. Yeah, sometimes the twist is that the twist is good.
Yeah, sometimes it's not.
All right, so we gotta talk about what this game looks like, because it is a GameCube game, which is not like a terrible thing, but the early 3D era had a problem if you had control over the camera, which is, it's hard to make visuals when you have limited hardware that look good at various zoom levels, right? So like the middle zoom, because this is still a 4x3 game, right? So like the middle zoom level is where I kept the camera pretty much all the time, because it was a mix of I can see what I'm doing and also the textures are like not hideous grainy nightmares. If you zoom way in, because there's such a small amount of stuff on the screen, the textures actually get a little bit smoother, but then like your field of view is so tight as to be utterly useless. And if you zoom all the way out, then you have this huge field of view, but everything just looks like a grainy mess. So it's the game doesn't look bad overall, but just my rating for the game overall notwithstanding, I would never recommend this version. I would recommend the Wii re-release, literally just because it has higher quality textures and a bigger field of view, being 16x9. So they're not bad, they're just super of their time, right? They're limited.
Well, and also too, I think that one of the things that this is weirdly hitting is the nostalgia goggles uncanny valley, right? Which is to say that you probably remember this game, like Mega Man, you remember as being Mega Man. Mega Man X, you remember as being Mega Man X. This game, you probably are now remembering like Pikmin 4, you know, like the modern Pikmin, in the same way that it's like, you know, I remember Super Mario cart as Super Mario Kart. I remember what that looks like, right? But when somebody says, what does Super Mario 64 look like? I'm like Super Mario Kart 8. That's what it looks like, obviously, because I loved that game, and it's got to be better than 8. So, you know, like... Yeah.
Therefore, the things I like are good.
Yeah, things I like are good. The things I like are bad, or things I don't like are bad, and it's always easy to tell the difference. Now,
I think you actually nailed it the first time. Some of the things you like are good. Some of the things you like are bad.
That is true, and the more people that could admit that, we would be in a much better place. I like this thing. It's a bad thing, but I like it. Don't take it from me. So I think that that's part of the issue, in my opinion. Also, one of the nice things, though, that I think Nintendo did very well in this era, which is not trying regularly or really, to my memory, kind of ever to stray into trying to do real life stuff, you know? So like,
yes. Yeah. They were big fans of pushing their artistic vision without saying we're going to make Call of Duty with hyper realistic skin pores on everybody's beard.
Right. Yeah. Cause it's, you know, there's no one in this verse that would say Olimar looks like a human. Olimar looks like Olimar, you know, and the Pikmin look like Pikmin, you know. In whatever Legend of Zelda, where it's like Mr. Tingle, it's like, that's a weird fairy Pikmin like dude, you know, not a human, because nobody's a human, you know.
Yeah. Well, so even I think the bugs, because I mean they never come out and say it, but you're on Earth, right? You're tiny, you're incredibly tiny, so everything looks gigantic, but all the bugs are like stylized kind of cartoony bugs, right? They're not photorealistic bugs,
right? Yeah. So I think that was, you know, obviously the right decision given their constraints. One of the things that I thought was interesting is that I felt, and this will stray a little bit into mechanics, so I'm going to save the bulk of this for mechanics, is that the visual style, in my opinion, is kind of what makes this game, because a lot of the puzzles, if you were to boil it down to like what the puzzle is, they're kind of simple and straightforward, right? But because it's in this beautiful, like, strange world, you know, like that eats up some of your brain's capacity. But if the puzzles were represented in a top-down Baba is You style, it would take you like 30 seconds to solve them. You'd be like, okay, one Pikmin here, and then I get two, and then those Pikmin go over there, and then that, done, you know? But because it's in this beautiful 3D world where all of the information isn't always given to you right away, it kind of helps. So I think that in a way, the poor visuals and the poor camera kind of help with the game, and especially poor camera controls and poor visuals not getting all the information feeds into your survival horror aesthetic.
It does. And the which we'll, you know, have to dig in more about the timer in gameplay, but the fact that you don't know exactly what to do and that you are under time pressure means some of the ingredients in the complexity of solving problems is that you don't know what to do and you're under time pressure, not that the problem is inherently super complicated. And so I think you make a valid point where if you had this super detailed map and the super wide field of view and everything was super high detail and there were arrows pointing at objectives and it's like, get this, bring it here, which you eventually learn is what you're supposed to be doing, but the visuals don't do anything to reinforce that. So you're left with, you have to explore and kind of feel the world out, which goes with the art direction, right? The art direction is very, you're an alien on this strange planet, kind of looks like Earth. Oh, this is Earth. Oh, I crashed on Earth. And like, what the hell happened to the Earth, right? Because now you're looking around at things that should be super familiar, and yet everything feels like strange and alien because you're being forced into seeing it through Olimar's point of view, which is fantastic, right? And things like the scale they chose to make him, the how sparsely populated, because I mean, you crash in a forest, right? So like, it's a forest, but it's not filled with, it's not like Kirby and the Forgotten Land where you're obviously in like a post-apocalyptic Earth and they just kind of never address it. Like, this is also a post-apocalyptic Earth, but you sort of need to tease that out for yourself,
right? Yeah, absolutely. And that, and the not having all of the information is very typical of the horror genre. Quick side note, I actually got into a long discussion with a couple of friends recently on the horror genre, and it was just funny to me because, like, you know, we've been talking about this for so long where they said, oh yeah, you know, I really loved Predator. I thought that was a great horror flick. I'm like, that's not a horror movie, you know? And then we like got into it, and I was like, and so I then went on this diatribe, and they're like, are you into horror movies? I'm like, no, not particularly.
I just know what they are.
Yeah, I just know what it is, and I know that Predator is not a horror movie. And so, yeah, so when you said this is a horror game, I was like, yeah, it is. Yeah, and one of the things that they do with the visuals is it's uncanny, you know? So in the sense of, you know, it's like, all right, man, you know, hey, look at this beautiful, you're beautifully colored. Look at all this beautiful plant life, beautiful everything. Like, yeah, man, yeah. Hey, you're going to die pretty soon, actually. So you need to kind of get on this. You're like, what was that last part? It's like, yeah, you're going to lose all your oxygen. So, you know, you're going to die pretty painfully, so figure out how to get off. But hey, look at that fun little plant. Isn't that cool? It's like, I don't like this anymore. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I mean, most of the bugs are essentially walking mouths. They're like giant eldritch horror monsters. It's just that they're they're colored with Crayola crayons. So when you see like the big bug and he's like snoozing and his little eye stalks are closed, and then he wakes up and his eyes shoot up away from his head because they're on eye stalks, right? Which is already like kind of so like, there's just it's everything is like very friendly, and like the enemies essentially are the exact same art style as the Pikmin, which are friendly, right? And yet they're just off enough, right? Like the Pikmin have like normal eyes on their head. The bugs all have like big popping eyes. The Pikmin have no mouths. The bugs are all giant mouths because they eat Pikmin. So there's just a lot of like clear signaling in like kind of where the mechanical differences are going to be. Things with big mouths are bad because Pikmin don't have mouths, but it's very subtle in a way that if you weren't scrutinizing it, you probably wouldn't say, oh, I was able to tell that all the villains were villains because they had mouths. Like that's that feels like a stupid thing, but if you're planning out the art direction, then it's like, oh, subconsciously people will recognize this.
It's like good old Frankie Two Hands. You know who he is? Because he has two hands. It's the only defining characteristic. One other visual note that I had, which is just kind of a throwaway thing, but like once I started to get a little bit further on, and you know, I had like 30-40 Pikmin, right? I was like, ah, yes, this is a GameCube game, because it would have melted any other hardware that came before it to render all of these. As I'm watching them, like, you know, kind of all move around in these undulous waves, I was like, oh, right. No, yeah, no, that would have, that's necessary for this.
Yeah, whenever we bop from like several generations over, then it, or like, if you know, as we've moved on in the course of the show and we've gotten into later games because time has continued to move forward, like I often catch myself looking down and I'm like, wait, what console is this? Oh, right, yeah. Man, look at all those triangles, so many polygons.
Look at all the triangles they can make. Yeah, but thank goodness that this game costs the same as modern games, because there aren't any more triangles anymore.
There are no more triangles. I will give a nod to like the near endless little visual flourishes that I think probably a lot of people miss because you really have to be looking for them, and they're like micro scale flourishes. There's like the if you leave a Pikmin in the ground and you don't immediately harvest it, their bud, or their bulb turns into a bud, which then turns into a bloom, and they're actually faster and stronger when they're bloomed. So like you have a tactical incentive to leave them planted longer if you can. But then there's also like the nectar stuff you can find out in the wild in a few different places, and they go insane for that stuff because it like it's steroids for them, I guess. Right. It's a super soldier serum. So they, you know, they like they rip up the grass and they pull out the nectar. There's a couple other ways to get it. But they like bend over and drink from it, and it makes this like loud slurping drinky noise. And then they like kind of like bear down, and their bud like pops into a bloom. And it's like, most of the time you're not paying attention to the actions of an individual Pikmin because you're commanding your army. Right. And so it's like, there's all these little visual pops and little characterizations that are, you could completely miss. Like if you were playing this on a small screen, especially like an old CRT screen, like you might never notice like the cute little drinking animation and like the way they kind of go like, if they get tired and lost, and then they sort of look around like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing right now. Like they don't go completely static. They sort of almost fidget and kind of idle, like I was, you know, my boss was giving me directions and now they're not. And there's just like a million little things like that across their animations, but also just kind of the world in general. And I was like, huh, this is another reason to play this game in HD, because you can so easily miss so much of this characterization and like kind of loving little animations and details. And it's like, that's, I always feel bad for animators in those cases, right? Like if I only hear sound effects when I have headphones on, I'm like, that poor sound effects guy. Like I everybody is missing this.
He worked so hard.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else for audiovisual?
I mean, the music is reinforcing the art direction, the visual style, right? It's very, it almost like those like wind up toys, you know, like not a music box, but like a children's version of a music box that's made out of like cheap metal. So it sounds kind of like tinkly and sort of like simple, almost like lullaby-esque, right? It's kind of like child friendly music. And that really reinforces the colorful art aesthetic that completely misleads you on what is actually happening in this game. Everything is just kind of like round and gentle sounds, and like the Pikmin are like super, you know, Pikmin. And then, you know, every time you throw one, they go, whoa. And so there's like all the sound design is exactly the same Crayola crayon kind of like, everything's fine, everything is not fine. Right. And that's, I think that was important, because if the music was super like actiony, kind of like what you were saying with Predator, right? Is like Predator is an action movie, and so it has like action music, and Alien is a horror movie, so Alien has horror music. And if you swapped those, it completely undermines the story and the tone that they're going for. So to have all these like super bright visuals, if they had like hero going to save the day music, you know, like if you put the Legend of Zelda soundtrack from Wind Waker on here, like I think it would screw it up, because Olimar is not a hero and the Pikmin are not heroes. Like you are in a crisis situation and you're trying not to asphyxiate to death.
Well, it's interesting too, because like, because I mean, basically what they're kind of doing is leveraging the uncanny. So for example, I was listening to a song about like Doki Doki. Do you know anything about that?
Doki Doki Literature Club?
Yeah. Something like that.
Or Doki Doki Panic? I mean, there's a lot of Doki Dokis.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. This one was clearly a song about, like, the thing is that there's, like, one guy, it's, like, and, like, four or five girls or whatever, and, you know, like, oh, no, they're all into him, that kind of
That sounds thing. Like Doki Doki Literature Club.
Cool. So it's a song about that, right? But I think that it was supposed to be, like, horror, because, like, one of the things that they do is they're, like, you know, like, like, I hope that you feel the same way, too. And it's all, like, kind of bubbly. But then occasionally they do, like, that kind of, like, you know, like, if, like a computer, like, glitching out. And I'm like, I don't like that. Is this? And they're like, you know, like, I just need you to say that you feel the same way about me. And it's like, huh. So I say all that to say, like, that type of music. But, like, so, again, like, that is a horror song. But it's very light and bubbly. And all they have to do is just tweak a few things. And then all of a sudden you're like, no, this is now uncanny, not bubbly. And I think that this kind of audio does that.
Yeah. And you are definitely talking about Doki Doki Literature Club, which has some like very cool fourth wall breaking, you know, mess with the player to add to the horror aesthetic, which now that somehow inexplicably has become a perfect segue to talking about the mechanics of this game, because this game I am convinced is a horror game, and I am not trying to be like difficult about that. Like, I honestly believe that the intention with creating this game for Nintendo was, we want to make something that has more mature themes and that is challenging in a way that is like viscerally threatening, because you know, you die. But we want to kind of wrap it in the Nintendo vibe, right? Like we have to do things in a Nintendo-y way. We're not going to just make an overtly like, monsters and scary and ooh, spooky music, right? So I said this a little bit when I was doing the summary, but to be very clear, you are alone flying through space. You are hit by a meteor. You crash on this planet. Your scientific instruments determine that the atmosphere on this planet is largely oxygen, which is poisonous to you. And so if you aren't able to repair your ship in 30 days, then you will asphyxiate to death because you will not have access to, I don't know if they ever say what he breathes, but you won't have access to a, you know, suitable environment for Olimar. So you enlist the aid of the Pikmin once you discover them in the first day to help you recover the parts for your ship. And then in between every day, there's the logs that come up on screen, depending on what you did that day. Some of them I think are probably canned, but a lot of them are based on like, oh, I discovered Pikmin can do this, or I found the next color of Pikmin, or I got this part from my ship or whatever. But his logs very clearly outline that he's like, okay, I got to make sure I recover the parts for my ship so I can get off this planet. And then after a few days, he's like, all right, I'm not making progress as fast as I need to, which is concerning because after 30 days, the batteries for my spacesuit will run out and I will die in the atmosphere on this planet. And then toward like the high teens and low 20s, he starts talking about his family. And now he's like, you know, my son is sure going to not believe this incredible adventure I have if I get back, when I get back. And it's just like, Jesus Christ, he's terrified of asphyxiating to death alone on this planet because that would be a horrible way to die. No one knows where he is. And that is probably a really unpleasant way to end your life. So like everything about the game is, you know, resource management in terms of collecting the Pikmin, but it's, you have a timer on your day. How do you make sure you spend your day efficiently enough to get to the ship parts you need to escape, right? And to your earlier point, the puzzles are not super complicated, but there's like a lot of like emotional pressure to not asphyxiate to death on the planet. And there's time pressure because you can't just stand there and say like, oh, well, I'll leisurely solve this super easy block puzzle. Like you have to not die. So I have a lot of thoughts about that, but I think I've now set the stage of like what the game is actually asking of you, not my, oh, ha ha, adults think everything is dark interpretation. Like that is verbatim what the problem the game lays before you.
Right. I forget what it was, like what the alternative is, but I remember seeing a comic forever ago where somebody said, you know, oh yeah, you know, we use oxygen as like one of the main, you know, ways that we breathe oxygen to live. And, you know, an alien was like, oh my God, you breathe oxygen? Do you have any idea how reactive that is? Like, my God, how have you not blown yourself up? Your atmosphere is 20% oxygen? Like, that's horrifying, you know? So
that sounds like a Saturday morning breakfast cereal.
Yeah, right. But I mean, like, so Olimar being like, oh man, this thing is full of like horrifying reactive oxygen. I can't breathe this. Like that actually sticks. And interestingly, so yeah, cosign everything that you said. One of the things I wanted to touch on, it's less gameplay, but again, to kind of piggyback on your narrative, that is, you know what I thought of as I was listening to all of the different journal entries, right? Listening, reading. So the journal entries, like you said, they get increasingly horrifying. I really love the, you know, if I get back, I mean, when I get back, when that's I the same back. Thing as that, like, you know, weird, like, on the song where you're like, wait, you did say if the first time. It's like, oh, you know, but it's like, it's a kid's game. Not in exact subject matter, but even more support of the fact that they're doing a horror, a sci-fi horror is, you know, the most renowned sci-fi horror book that was told entirely through journal entries? Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah. It is an epistolary.
The first science fiction slash horror, you know, genre. So I was like, so basically is and again, like they weren't telling, you know, it from the standpoint of, oh, well, we're going to reanimate a body, you know, like that. But to say like, okay, well, we're going to take a lot of the themes of Frankenstein and kind of put them in here and deliver it very similarly. So again, you know, like in Frankenstein, you have, you know, Victor Frankenstein, who has like actively alienated himself from everybody socially, you know, aside from, you know, one or two minor allies. And Olimar has effectively done the same thing. He is alone in a strange place in a situation that he is ill prepared to handle, you know? So 100%, that checks all the boxes, you know?
Well, and there's so many interesting things that reinforce that I think this is like where I came down on, oh, not knowing this could maybe ruin your experience of the game. So here's the exact moment that made me go, wait a minute, what is happening here? So you, you harvest Pikmin, right? So there's the, I think they're called candy pop flowers, the flowers with like the big numbers on them. If you kill bugs, you can return the bugs to the onion, and the onion will then sprout more Pikmin of the color that it was returned to. And so that means if it's easy for you to produce the thing, it's usually easy for you to lose the thing, right? So it's like, oh, but Pikmin are abundant. And it's like, they are if you are careful and thoughtful, but it's also easy for dozens of them to die in like one mistake. Some of the levels have like fire that spews out of the ground. And if you're not paying attention, or if you're near an enemy that shoots fire and you're not paying attention, you could lose literally 100 Pikmin in one whoops, right? So like that, they seem incredibly abundant, but actually they, you know, they're very ephemeral. And when you lose Pikmin under certain circumstances, it tells you after the fact, right? Either the text will pop up on screen where he's like, oh, I've made an interesting discovery about how incredibly deadly this is. Or sometimes in the daily log at the end of the day, he will say like, oh, you know, I determined today that like this bug does this thing and it causes this problem, or this part of the environment does this thing and it causes this problem. And that was the inflection point for me where I was like, wait a minute. If this game was trying to be like friendly and approachable mechanically, the way it is, you know, visually and aurally, then they would tell you that stuff ahead of time. But because they in fact let you lose your entire army and possibly burn an entire day or two trying to rebuild it from a single mistake, I was like, oh, that fits way more with a like survival horror aesthetic. Is, oh, I didn't know ammunition was going to be in such short supply. I probably would not have unloaded all of my bullets into that one zombie because I thought I was playing an action game where bullets just rain down from the heaven, right? I thought Pikmin would just be an unlimited supply, but no, actually you can end up so alone that they have it. So if you run completely out of Pikmin on the next day, the onion will just produce a couple like pity starter Pikmin, right? So, but you can't get anything done with three Pikmin except go gather resources to make more Pikmin, right? So screwing up can cost you a whole day if you don't deeply understand like where the best resources are and how to best, you know, arrange your Pikmin for combat or whatever. So like that to me was the critical piece of knowledge that pivoted me from, oh, this is like a silly RTS. It's like, it's a silly Nintendo RTS where you have like a bunch of resources and you're just moving them around. I think I might have messaged you and I was like, oh, this is like if you played a game as the Zerg, right? Like it's an RTS where you're the Zerg because you have this like huge army, individually not very powerful, but overwhelming numbers. But I don't think it is. I think it really is a survival horror, don't starve style. You're not trying to save the Pikmin, right? Like they are a means to an end. And in the journal entries, he even grapples with that. He's like, are all these Pikmin dying because I landed on this planet? Like would their lives be better and more peaceful if I had not crashed here? Like he struggles with the horror he is bringing on them.
Well, and also too, you know, strong resource management is a hallmark of horror video games, you know? Cause I mean, if you compare, The Last of Us with, you know, Call of Duty or Cyberpunk 2077, right? In Cyberpunk 2077, I walk around with 500 rounds of pistol ammunition. I have never even come close to running out of pistol ammunition. Like, I make it rain bullets, you know? Whereas in The Last of Us, every single bullet you fire is meaningful, you know? If you fire three rounds at a guy and you miss all three, you feel that loss, you know? And the same thing with Pikmin. If Pikmin just kind of spewed out, if you said, like, excuse me, Onion, I would like 500 Pikmin, please, and I just spewed them all out, I'd say, eh, you know, that's an action game, right? But strong resource management is more of a horror aesthetic. And also, too, one of the things that I think is very important is how is the player meant to feel, right? And so the thing is that, you know, if you, and so first of all, one other thing, there is no leveling mechanic, right? If there was a leveling mechanic, that would take you closer to adventure, action adventure, right? But you are as weak and powerless throughout the whole thing. You are entirely reliant on your supply, right? And then the question is, how is the character player meant to feel, right? So the thing is that if all of a sudden, you know, I, in Cyberpunk 2077, I walk in with my assault rifle and just blow through 300 rounds of ammunition, just, you know, mowing people down left and right, and yeah, you know, I wasn't purely effective, and I maybe hit one out of 10 shots, you know, I'd be like, ah, well, you know, I lost some ammo, but I'm just going to go get more and whatever, right? Versus, like, if all of a sudden the fire takes out, like, you know, 30 of your, you know, 40 Pikmin, you are devastated. And more importantly, is you're just kind of like, did I just die? Like, did that just kill me? You know? And I'm with you, because initially when I was playing the game, one of my notes was, I was like, I don't like the time limit. I don't like the time limit. It stresses me out. I just want to sit back and solve some puzzles, you know, like Baba is you. And then it wasn't until I started getting into it, and I was like, oh, no, you have to have the time limit for what they're trying to do.
Yeah, well, and this is, I think, interesting, because I know it's been a while since you played Pikmin 2, but my understanding, because I played Pikmin 2 when it was new, so like 2 decades ago, but my understanding
does not have a time limit.
Neither does 3 or the upcoming fourth one that is going to release this year. So like they decided to go in the I want to make puzzles direction more than the, so I'm sure the puzzles in Pikmin 2 and 3 are a lot more complicated because you have time to solve them. But what pushes this, I think, in it toward that more survival horror kind of direction is, if a bunch of Pikmin die, you can't just go, oh, well, I'll just go make more, because that takes time. And time is a finite resource, right? And if you, if Olimar actually, so you can go, you have health, right? You can fight and you can take damage. And if you go back to the spaceship, it will replenish your health, but that takes time. So if you are out in the field and you die, you stumble back, like you're hurt and you, like, you know, grope your way back to the ship and your day just ends. So if you screw up early in the day, you've lost an entire day now because you failed at a combat encounter, right? So like, just like you would expect Joel to not be like, ah, clickers, pew, 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 right? Like, you see a bug, and if you aren't good at commanding your Pikmin, then it's like, okay, I risk losing a bunch of Pikmin, and if I'm not paying attention to where Olimar is, I risk getting hurt and dying, which then losing Pikmin burns time, you know, sprouting more Pikmin, but losing Olimar burns an entire day immediately. So there's powerful mechanical incentives to avoid combat. But of course, like any good survival horror game, combat is unavoidable. The early, so there's, I think, 5 areas. One of them is technically optional, but there's like 4 main areas. And then there's like a 5th area you can unlock if you're going super fast. The bugs are inconsistent, so they, as you progress through the game, there's more bugs in the earlier areas, and if you go to the same area multiple days in a row, some of the bugs don't respawn every single day, so you can sort of strategize across days. Again, none of this is communicated in game, like you have to divine all this from observation. So you might go into an area and say, okay, all we're hunting today, like all we're gonna do is kill bugs, because bugs give you more Pikmin sprouts than the little candy pop flowers. And you could spend a whole day like that, but then that's a day you didn't advance toward getting any ship parts back, right? So like, some of the environment can be changed, like there's walls that can be broken down, and those stay broken down once they're broken down. So it's like, okay, so I got to get some Pikmin, and I got to go over here, and I got to have them knock down the wall. But then by the time they're done with that, like, I won't have time to go look for any ship parts. So while they're doing that, I'm actually going to go wander around alone, like without any Pikmin or with a small group of Pikmin, looking for where the ship parts are to try and figure that out. And then later you get the radar, I think, which gives you a map so you can like at least see where the ship parts and stuff are. Like, it's empowering if you don't care about him asphyxiating to death, but all the mechanics and all of the theming are very like, you're scared, right? You're scared, you're in a terrible, dangerous situation. And I just couldn't get over the fact that that critical detail would probably make or break this for someone.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that so one of the other, again, feelings and mental calculus that I think is very important is that in The Last of Us, right, I still remember when this one moment that I had, and this had similar moments, which is that in The Last of Us, there's no inherent reward for killing clickers, right? You know, like, in fact, it costs cost, resources.
Yeah.
The only reason to kill clickers is because there might be stuff where they are, you know? So I remember at one point, like, you know, being in a building and kind of doing the listen thing and seeing a clicker in like a shed, you know, and just saying, nope, don't need to go mess with that guy. And then I just left, right? Whereas if it was a RPG, I'd be like, ah, you know what I see? A big bag of experience. And I'm going to go beat that thing until it drops my EXP, right? Olimar's is kind of the same thing, which is to say that, like, yes, the bugs give you more Pikmin, but that's, I mean, like, if they give you 10 Pikmin, right, and it costs you 12 to kill it because, you know, then that was not only, it's not even a wash, it's a waste of time, you know?
Right,
so
because it also takes time to carry the bug back to the onion. So if you came out negative Pikmin and negative time, it's like, could I have just avoided that encounter entirely?
Right. Do I need, and so those types of things, as opposed to like, hey, I'm going to, for example, in Cyberpunk 2077, every single time I see a person with a little yellow arrow over their head, that person is dead, you know, because because they have stuff and they have experience, and I'm
going, something personal, man. You got a yellow arrow.
I don't know what to tell you. And you know it's bad when you start to like make little games of it, because if you upload a hack, you watch the hack upload, and then right when it hits, it'll kill them. And if they're in like a group of three, my goal is to shoot the other two right as the other hack uploads, so they all three drop at the same time. I'm like, these are people with lives, you know. Like, and I'm making a game on how I'm going to kill him. That's empowering, right? That's not Olimar. That's not what you're doing here, you know?
No.
And to your point, right, is that, like, one of the things that I hate in games is I hate it when they waste my time. So initially, again, I was just kind of like, oh, my God, it's taking forever for these dumb things to walk the thing back to the spaceship. I wish I was dead, you know? So I was like, why can't they just like teleport it back or something? Like, why are you wasting my time? But again, when all of a sudden you're, and I was like, and also, and it was just funny because I was railing against it. I was like, you know, God, it takes forever for them to bring it back. And on top of that, I've got this dumb time limit that I don't like. It's stressing me out because, I mean, God, if it's taking them forever to bring it back and they're giving me a time limit, why are they? Oh.
Yeah. Yes. Right. And that's the exact kind of experience I had, which changed my enjoyment of it a lot, right? Because I stopped insisting that this chicken tasted funny, and I was like, oh, it's pork. Oh, it's pork. Okay, now I'm evaluating a completely different thing.
Yes. Yeah. No, agreed. What else you got?
I do want to talk a little bit about the combat, because this is actually some place where I feel like the GameCube-iness of this fell down a little bit. So they do a good job of, you know, like a lot of Nintendo games, the frame rate is locked, right? There's no slowdowns. I didn't see any like tearing or anything, right? So it's visually performant, but to command the Pikmin is to give suggestions, right? You order them in a manner of speaking, but also they have their own like lightweight AI. So for example, if they get near a candy pop flower, they will murder that candy pop flower without you having to tell them to, but they won't carry the bud stamen. I don't know. They won't carry the number token thing back on their own, because then they're gone, right? So they won't make them just leave your party for no goddamn reason. But if you get near an enemy, they also won't attack the enemy on their own most of the time. Like, you have to command them to do that, which means if you're not paying attention or you're distracted by something or you get separated from some of your Pikmin, which if you're playing aggressively is going to happen, you'll leave some over here working on one task and you'll go over here and do something else. They won't defend themselves. They will just stand there and happily die. So you end up kind of stressed in a way that I think does sort of fit, but can be frustrating, where it's like, I'm, you know, using the C-stick to like march you around, and I would like you to kill this thing. But the best way to say I want you to kill this thing is to throw you at it. But when I use the C-stick, I can march my whole army around. When I throw them, I have to throw them one at a time. So like, it's awkward to say like, all of you attack. Like, there's no real good way to do that, which I guess kind of, again, like, I don't think it's intentional, but it does kind of fit the, like, ah, crap, like, I can't get them to understand what I want them to do, and some of them are dying, and it's causing me to lose time, and it's causing other problems. So that's, it does fit, but it created more frustration than I think was necessary. Like, make the enemies harder to kill instead of making the Pikmin stupider, because Harder to Kill feels like, oh god, the world is so hostile, and Stupider Pikmin feels like this game was poorly programmed, right? So it just it shifts the stress to a place where I'm mad at the game, not the monster.
Sure. Well, I think may be the cause there, though, is if you look at what was it? I always forget the name of this video game when I really need to know it. It's
Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Yes, it's a good video game. No, it's the one where you play a it's like a Call of Duty clone, except that you're actually suffering from PTSD.
Oh yeah, we were talking about that. I think on the last episode. Yes, yeah. That one. The one where war is slightly realistic.
Yeah. But anyways, so sometimes I is my understanding that, you know, like what very well may have happened is they're like, hey, we want to create this cool game where you like you control these little guys and they go off and, you know, like here's kind of the game mechanics we want to do. And then as they're playing it, they're like, god, this AI sucks, you know? And it's just like, well, we can't really make it any better because either A, we don't have faith in the player's ability to control all of this, which was, again, still, they were coming down off of that slope, you know, but there was still the, how could you control these 10 things at once? And it's just like, dude, man, kids' brains are pliable. Or, you know, they just could not program the AI to be smart enough. So they were like, okay, well, it's really kind of janky the way that they handle this. Let's make it into a horror game, you know, in the same way that, the other game was like, okay, well, all of our running and gunning and shooting and everything about this game is a little bit stickier than our, you know, Call of Duty or what have you. So, well, let's make that part of it. Like, the reason why it's sticky is because you're losing your mind, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, these things tend to work in like a feedback loop, right? So they want there to be tension, and then they program the game, and then that, I mean, it's complicated, right? So like then how that AI manifests, they tweak it in ways to suit what the vibe they're going for is, but also like what is realistic. So there's the change we made on purpose, and then there's the Bob Ross like happy little accident, and you know, all of those things together make the finished product. But I would not be surprised if we play Pikmin 2, or if like I eventually, now I am very curious for Pikmin 4 that's I think coming out later this year. I would not be surprised if the AI is smarter for the individual Pikmin, but the world is either more complicated or more difficult to shift the player's frustration back onto the puzzle or the monster, as opposed to like, these stupid things won't listen to me. Because that's, you could make a game like that, right? You could very easily say, oh, you're trying to, you know, command your troops, but all you can do is give them an objective and then they play the objective out, right? And so they might do stupid things you hate, but then it's a lot clearer to the player, like, oh, I have no hand in this. In Pikmin, the C-stick will make them like march around you, you know, like you can, it plays like a little, it almost sounds like taps, right? It's like, burr, 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 and it like makes them march around. But if you have, I don't know, more than like 20, they refuse to stand in anything even vaguely resembling a single file line. Like they physically like push each other with their little Pikmin shoulders. So there are some puzzles where you have to like navigate a small area, like a narrow passageway, and so you can't march an army of 100 Pikmin single file up there. There's literally no way to communicate that to them, which means you have to say, okay, 10 of you come with me, and then you walk them up there, and then you press X, I think, which like makes them separate from you and just stand and wait for your next command, and you gotta go back and get some more and do it again, which is not terrible, but it's just on the side of frustrating where it's like, give me a clear way to communicate this and then make that thing take a long time, as opposed to making the act of executing incredibly frustrating, because I'm like, my attention is now like, oh, the Pikmin are stupid. This game is poorly designed. And it's not like, I think saying you can't control a group of 100 as effectively as you can control a group of 5 is probably not an accident or a limitation. I think it was an intentional design choice, but the way it comes across is like, oh, the Pikmin are just dumb. And so you're micromanaging a lot more, which again creates like stress and time pressure, which does feed the aesthetic, but it's like do what I
right,
want.
So,
to
I mean, that's the thing, is that like, it's in this case, it is at least, in my opinion, like it feels like it may have been a deliberate decision. Now, whether or not that decision
I think so.
is is enjoyable, right, you know, may vary from person to person. Because, I mean, I've definitely played games where, you know, I'm like, this was a very well, good, well thought out choice, and I hate it, and I wish it wasn't yes. in here, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, because I mean, I think that that's one of the things we've kind of talked about is the big difference is being able to say whether or not a thing is good versus whether or not a thing you like a thing, you know?
Yes.
So I think that, you know, kind of saying like, all right, and to be fair, maybe part of the reason why they didn't just say, you know, okay, point to the end of the thing and then they'll all queue up and it takes the same amount of time. It just, you know, it's one command is because maybe they're kind of hoping that you are going to try to kind of go all in and shove everyone down there at the same time and then screw it up. You
Which
know?
I did. Yes.
Because you're like, I can do this. And it's like, no, you can't. And it's like, all right, you know, no, I can't, I guess. So maybe some of that.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to make sure I brought up, because I think it's a clever thing, and it's just one more piece on the stack of they're not guaranteeing your success, right? Because in an action adventure game, they want you to be successful. You're the hero. In a survival horror game, you might fail and die. So one of the cool things they do to reinforce that, especially on a first playthrough, is you crash, you have 30 days, there's 30 ship parts, right? And you, every time you recover a part, he tells you what it does. He usually says like something kind of funny. Like the writing is actually fairly charming. I found across even the more horrifying stuff is like still earnest and endearing. Like there's good characterization there. But he says like, okay, we found this part. Yay. This part does whatever. Now I can do whatever. And it's metaphorical. You don't literally, your behavior doesn't literally change when you get certain parts, but he's like, oh yeah, I found like the chair for the cockpit. Like I'll have a comfortable place to sit now. Right. It doesn't change anything, but there's a lot of characterization in it, but it's not until fairly far into the game, like maybe two thirds of the way through, where he starts to fret about what if I don't find all the parts in time. And then just like a lot of the action stuff and the way Pikmin die and the way you deal with the environment is told to you after the fact, on like day 22 or something, he says, maybe the ship will fly if I don't have all the parts, and maybe I'll be okay. And then around like day like 25 or 26, he's like, hopefully the parts I'm recovering are the ones most necessary for the ship to function, because I don't know that I'm going to have them all. And on day 30, I have to attempt to leave this planet. Otherwise I will die of asphyxiation. Right.
And otherwise then, I'll just die. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I say all that to say, on a subsequent playthrough, because of all the little flavor text that comes along with the parts you recover, you actually would know, oh, these are the parts required to beat the game. And then if you want the best ending, then you have to get all of the parts. But there are parts that are like red herring parts. Like one of them is a flotation device. And when you recover it, he's like, oh, this would be important if I crashed like near water, but I'm actually a pretty good swimmer and it doesn't help the ship fly. This might not have been the best use of my time. And it's like, nice. Oh no. Right. And yeah. So they, when it's too late to do anything about it, that's when they're like, oh, by the way, not every part is going to help get you to safety. Some of them are just like convenience parts or nice to have parts. And so on a subsequent playthrough, you might say, like, to add to the replayability of the game, is you might say like, oh, what is the fastest I can, I think it's 20. I think there's 20 mandatory parts or like 22 mandatory parts to get the normal ending. It's like, oh, what is the fastest route to getting those? You know, can I do it in 15 days? Can I do it in 10 days? Can I do it in a single digit number of days? Right? Like how quickly can I get the hell off this planet? And I think that's
cool. I wonder what the speed run for this game is.
Oh, I'm sure there's like a, what's the fastest number of days? And then what's the fastest you can actually finish the game? A fun thing, I actually haven't been watching speedruns as much as I used to, just for time's sake, but a fun thing about games that you can do what's usually called like a credits warp, where it's like, oh, if you do this, you didn't really beat the game, you just caused this glitch that makes the credits fire, and so like, haha, you beat it in like 90 seconds or whatever. So in the pause menu, there's a go directly to sunset, so technically, if you were willing to get the bad ending, you could just power through all 30 days and then just die, right?
Nice. Like,
and the game is technically over, and I'm sure that's a category because it's funny.
So basically, like, that's the you landed and you just gave up and decided to, instead of spending your last 30 days stressed and working towards saving your life, you have just resigned yourself and you will spend your last 30 days relaxing and enjoying life.
Yes.
And then dying.
Yeah. I'm gonna die on this planet and I'm fine with it. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I've made peace with it. Yeah.
I wonder if you get any, like, special diaries if you get into, like, the 10s, 20s days where you haven't recovered any parts. If he's like, what am I doing with my life? Like, I mean, it'd be interesting, right? Because you're not doing anything during the day to generate a lot of the flavor text of, like, oh, I learned that the blue Pikmin can go in the water and the yellow Pikmin can pick up explosives and that helps me solve puzzles, right? Like, you wouldn't get any of that flavor text because you're not doing any of that stuff.
Yeah, just be like, this is nice.
Yeah. The last thing as a kind of like epilogue to that idea is every day the game asks you if you want to save, right? And so because Nintendo's Nintendo and they do want this game to be somewhat approachable, you could save scum your way to victory. So if you have a truly heinous day, oh, I meant to use the phrase earlier, what gets measured gets managed. So, like, it tells you every day how many Pikmin you sprouted, how many you lost in battle, and how many you left behind, right? So, like, those are basically your only stats other than how many ship parts have you recovered. So, like, that's what you will now manage. How many did I make? How many did I leave behind? How many got lost in battle? And so, because you can, you see that screen at the end of the day before they ask you if you want to save, you could very easily save scum your way to victory and just say, like, nope, that day was a bad day, so I would like to actually attempt that day again, which I don't think is bad. And I think that is an example of a feature where that's a feature that matches the appearance more than the tone, because the appearance is friendly and approachable and the tone is dark and very threatening to your life. And saying, hey, champ, do you want to maybe try that day again? Even though it's indirect, they don't flat out say, like, yeah, maybe give that another attempt. But it's like, hey, you don't have to save. You could try that whole day over, right? That makes it a little bit more friendly and approachable, which I think is good. I think it's a good inclusion.
Well, and one of the things that, and I've experienced this in video games, and it's such a difficult needle to thread with horror games, is you have to go between feeling powerless, but you can't push the player to feeling hopeless, you know, because if all of a sudden you're like, well, I had a terrible run, I'm just not in this anymore, like, I'm already dead, like, I give up, you know, so I'm still playing the game, but I'm not really in it anymore, like, well, now you've lost the feel. I still remember one of the times I can point to that happened to me was, and I didn't finish the game because of it, was BioShock. The first time I got into an area with, like, a Big Daddy, he killed me, like, 10 times consecutively. And I was like, I don't, like, the first time he killed me, I was like, oh man, I was on edge, and, you know, like, oh, you know, like, what's gonna happen? By the 10th time, I was like, I don't care if this guy lives or dies. Like, he's died so many times, I've lost all connection to this character being me, you know? And so because of that, like, then all of a sudden they're like, look at this other terrible thing that happens, like, well, oh, what's gonna happen? I'm gonna die, like, I don't really care.
Yep.
You know, so yeah, so being able to say, like, if you're like, oh man, things went terrible, I need to try that again, I think that actually preserves the feeling of fear and horror more so than what would be more likely to happen, which would be like, oh wow, you know, I spawned 10, lost 500, and left behind 500. And it's like, well, that's it, man. That's game, Hendrix, you know?
Yeah. And having, like, personally, I put the restriction on myself where I was like, I'm not going to redo any days. Like, I'm trudging forward because the game has a time limit, so I'm either going to survive or I'm not, but, like, I'm getting to the end of this. And so I made sure I didn't say, like, okay, well, I'll replay this day. Like, I set the cycle time as 30 days instead of one day, basically. And on a first playthrough, I think that's actually how I would recommend it. Like, don't try to master every area every day, not the least of which is because you have to, there's only four areas. So, like, you go from area to one to two, and then later you will have to go back to one, and then you go to three, and then you will still have to go back to one and two, because you can't, you get the water Pikmin in the third area. So you can't do any of the water stuff in the first area until you've gotten the blue Pikmin in the third area. So it's not exactly backtracking, because there's just four little zones. But it if you said like, oh, I'm gonna keep playing day one until I get a perfect day one, it's like, if this is your first playthrough, do you even know what that means? Do you know what is possible with the resources you have? Because you may be throwing yourself at problems that are literally intractable because you don't have the tools.
Yeah, no, I think that, to be fair, I think that even on a first playthrough, I would reload a save. Again, if I had like a tragic day, you know, so I think that you're right. Saves coming your way to perfection is not the way to go, you know, unless you're specifically like, oh, I'm trying to get this achievement or something like that. Right. But yeah, I mean, I do still think that if you're like, I think that went so poorly that, you know, I've lost. I mean, it, you know, it's just like in Civilization, you know, Civilization 6, where like if somebody comes in and bloodies my nose, then I'm going to go back and bloody that guy's nose. But like if and I'm going to take over, his entire cities and run them better. But if they come in and, you know, they bloody my nose and take 4 out of my 5 cities in like 4 rounds, I'll say like, no, I'm going to reload an old save and like get ahead of this, because now even if I could recover, the amount of time I'll spend frustrated from recovering is going to sap all the fun out of it, you know. So I think that's what it's there for. It's there to be like the emergency ripcord, so the cycle time doesn't have to be 30 days, it just can be 30 days, you know.
Yeah, but well, this I think is an important thing to know about yourself as a player, is like, at what point, if I find saves coming, you know, big scare quotes, acceptable, like, at what point, how much of my time as the player am I willing to say, or how much of my frustration or my experience of the game or whatever, before I'm like, nope, no, that suffering that loss means I don't want to play anymore, so I'm going to undo that loss. Like, that's, I think, a perfectly reasonable thing. It's just that feature, especially in like older PC games where you could save at any time and you could have a million save files because you just had your entire PC hard drive, like, that kind of saves coming, I think, is negative. And some people will defend it, right? But they're like, no, man, I love injecting heroin into my eyeballs. And it's like, do you? Or are you just addicted to it? Because you're definitely addicted to it, but I'm not as confident that you enjoy it as much as you're claiming you do. It's like, no, man, I love a game where everything goes perfectly the first time and I live a perfect life. And it's like, but you know that that's not what happened. Like, sure, you tricked the game into thinking you're perfect, but like, do you actually feel like you played a perfect game? Like, every time this person went to the bathroom, you move the pieces on the chessboard and you're like, I'm great at chess.
Actually, I had an experience with Cyberpunk 2077 recently, because occasionally they'll give you missions with like side, you know, missions, you know, and some of them are like, don't get detected. And I save scummed the hell out of one mission, but it was because the person that gives them to me like really pats me on the back when I do the extra stuff, and I wanted that. I wanted that pat on the back, you know. Like, so. Because she gets, like, you know, if you screw it up and you don't, and you get detected, she goes like, you know, like, not bad, V, you got the thing done that I wanted you to get done, but I honestly expected better. And I'm like, oh, but if I do it right, then she goes like, ah, you're like a knight ninja, you're amazing what you do. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but again, like, there is an external reward that I'm seeking there, you know. But, but yeah,
I think really sad webcomic of like a little kid getting like scolded by his teachers for not doing well in his homework, and then he goes home and it, like, his parents are fighting, and so he feels like all nervous about that, and then the last panel is the TV screen, like, he's holding a game controller and the TV screen says like, you did it, good job, and he's crying. Oh, it's just like, oh my god.
Well, I mean, that gut punch, I think, is a good directional end to our horror discussion. Do you think it held up?
You know, I do. I think it's a shame how critical the detail of like, the game is meant to be frustrating and you're probably supposed to play it more than once, is not, it's not spoon fed to you. And maybe a player with less games literacy than me would actually be more receptive to the subtle clues, but because I was like, it's cute and it's a Nintendo game and I have a bunch of biases about what that means, like, I really risked ruining my experience of this. So I would say no nostalgia goggles required. I would say if you're going to play the original Pikmin, probably play the Wii re-release, because even if you use a controller and not the Wiimote, the just 16:9 and higher textures just makes it nicer, right? The game fundamentally is the exact same game, but it is... it does have a slightly different control scheme, which can empower you a little bit more because it lets you do some things you couldn't normally do. But if you go back to the GameCube original, like it's great. I actually enjoyed it a lot once I understood I was eating pork and not chicken, and then it was great. And then I had a very different experience, but I had to have that correct orientation. If we do get around to Pikmin 2 at some point, or if I do play Pikmin 4 when it comes out, I would be very curious to compare that experience to this experience, because I'm pretty sure the trend line has moved away from survival horror into more of like resource management and puzzle solving, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it is a different thing. So should you go and hatch a bunch of Pikmin and then watch them die horribly? Like, yeah, totally.
So I agree, no nostalgia goggles required. I think though that you know, the fact that Pikmin 4 and whatever probably moved away from that aesthetic might support the idea of they created this horror aesthetic because that's what they could do, you know, and then now that they can do more, they're like, oh no, we, or either that or everybody, they were like, hey, check out this like Nintendo horror game that we made, and everybody was like, this is such a great puzzle game, and everybody and Nintendo went, yes,
yeah, yep. Mm-hmm. That's what actually feels a lot more likely, is there's there's more of a, like we were talking about in the last nostalgia goggles, like there's more of a business incentive to say like, oh, if the thing people are responding to are the cute characters in the puzzles, great, sure, here's more cute characters and puzzles, right? And we're gonna dial back the challenge and the threat of you dying horribly and really panicking that your family won't know where your corpse is, right? Like that's, you know, that's a choice, but yep. It is different.
Yeah, but yeah, I'd say no nostalgia goggles required. I do think that you're correct that you have to have your head on right, because I was also getting very irritated with how much of my time this game was wasting, and I don't like it. But then when I was like, oh no, it's supposed to be a horror game, then I was able to ease into the tension. But yeah, as far as Nintendo horror games go, if I had to pick one, this would be the one I'd pick, man.
The curtain falls, the music plays, the credits roll, then it all fades to black, and you're left by yourself. The fanfare is gone, there's no player two there by your side to share victories won. But as you slowly progress down the hall to your bed, a few great events leak back into your head from the time that you spent traversing the land, battling evil, fighting the darkness, just sword in hand. Your memories creep in with the edge of a smile. You realize again what you've lost for a while. You never think back much less on how you saved the day than on all the experience you gave. At the end of it all, gamers play what we play, not for game over, but rather for what we take away.
More along for the ride.